The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
All right, welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, and Kevin Negandhi with you. There's a lot to cover here. First off, I want to say out the gate, props to the Pac-12 for being flexible in a year where you need to be flexible and making that Cal-UCLA game happen on a Sunday with a local 9 a.m. kick, but at least they got the game in as they had to deal with COVID issues with their opponents. And to find a way to make that happen, I think that in the next month, we're going to have to be outside the box, find a way and figure it out so we can get some of these games in for teams that are just being penalized for doing nothing, right? And being prepared for doing nothing. We'll get the guys' thoughts on that later on. But I want to start off with the Augusta experience. And it was just cool, guys, seeing you guys out there Saturday morning, and they're finishing up the second round. You guys are on the par three. I got hit up by, you know, a couple questions on Twitter. A guy named DeShow803 wanted to know what the experience was like, and did you guys get to keep anything on the set? And Herbie, let's start with you. You were there before. You've been a part of the Augusta experience, but now being a part of it as a broadcaster, what was that like?
It was incredible, really. I'm not like this diehard golfer. I'm not a great golfer like a lot of our colleagues, but I enjoy it. I especially enjoy the majors. And I, like you said, I've been just as a patron probably last three or four years where there's, I can't even tell you how many people are inside. I would have no idea. I just a sea of humanity, especially around Tiger. And so that was my background, and it's beautiful, and you know, you're overwhelmed by the beauty. But Friday before game day, we got in on Thursday and took our COVID test and had to wait in our hotel until we got a thumbs up. And once I got my thumbs up, I went over to the course on Friday and had a chance to first of all, I was blown away by that. There's no one there. You know, it was just the members and their spouses and the players and their family and their spouse. And so there's limited media members. So like Tiger's teeing off, and I just ended up walking his round with him, and to be able to stand, I don't know, 30 feet away from him with hardly any, maybe 20, 30 people following him in a real round, in the Masters was surreal. And, you know, I was with, Peyton, and Peyton was saying things like, this might be the coolest sporting experience I've ever had in my life, you know, and that says a lot considering what he's done in his career.
Yeah. And just so people
who's
know,
Peyton, who's Peyton, Peyton Manning? Who's that?
Peyton Manning, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, it's just weird. Like there are no ropes. So you're walking, you know, with him. And usually, you know, in the past when I've been there, like you try to follow Tiger and you see like, you maybe see his hat, and then like you see the golf club. Oh, there's the club, you know. I mean, and then he swings and you hear it, but you don't have any idea because you're like 50 deep behind fans. And so here you're just standing next to him to watch. But to watch his laser focus was really cool. It was similar to like, you know, when if David's out there playing in a game or Peyton's out playing in a game, like he's in a game. Like he's locked in. It's not like he's looking over at Peyton saying, hey, what's up, man? Like he is in like game mode. And so that was really cool to watch him and just in awe of the way all these golfers hit the ball. It's just what a cool, memorable day, weekend. And that was probably, I love doing the show, but that was definitely the highlight, having a chance to do that and walk around on Friday.
Yeah. Me and Tom Brady and Wayne Gretzky and all those guys were walking around and we were just watching all the golf and, you know, we just sharing old stories. You know, the great one was telling me about his, you know, hockey and I was kidding. But it was cool, man. It was weird because when you suck at golf as bad as I do, to watch guys hit a ball that literally enters an elevator and goes up like 35 stories, like right away, you're like, oh, that's what it's supposed to look like. That's strange. But it was cool, man. Cool to see guys like Kirk, you know, they've been on the show for forever, like digging it and loving it. And just cool to see the grounds and how green the grass was. I have no problem eating off the ground, by the way. I'd eat off a fairway. I'd eat off the flowers. Like it's that manicured. It's that well taken care of. But so obviously cool experience that we know Kirk will never do again. You know, I mean, it's something that is not going to come around again. And, you know, 2020 has been strange and different. And when you get to experience stuff like this, it makes you kind of appreciate the strangeness of it, because good things come out of it too.
Yeah. Again, the Twitter question, which I found interesting, because I don't know if you guys do this, and do you guys take certain things off a set when you know you're at a place that, hey, we may never do this again. We may never be here again. I need something, some type of collectible or
of course
you guys take
we
anything?
Steal things. What are you talking about?
So, yes. So then what did you do? Did you take anything from that
first of all,
Augusta experience?
Kirk doesn't even know this, but I stole his coffee cup in front of him, just to be clear.
Like, I forgot mine.
Dang.
Huh? I forgot my cup. You can,
no, you didn't.
Can
I took it, bro. I'm telling you, it was the white one in front of you. I got a green one and a right one, homie G.
Oh, good for you.
So I gave Kirk's on the way out. But the coolest thing, by the way, by far, was the helmet. The helmet was so gangsta, it's ridiculous. That helmet was off the chain. I got more text about people. It was like, hey, can you snag me one of those helmets? Sure. Yeah, I'll get you one. I'll get you one on the way out. No problem.
We saw two of them. And where did they go? Did you guys
to Kirk Kirkstreet's house?
Oh man, I didn't get anything.
Kirk,
I
you know who gets those, right? You know, if I will bet $1 million that Lee Fitting has one of those helmets right now.
Oh yeah,
or a million.
Ruhlman, our stage director, he might have one or two. I got to start thinking like that, because I'm the worst at this. Is a cool moment. Let me take, you know, this from the set. I got to get into Pollock mode more on looking for stuff like that, because
I'm a thief at heart, bro. It works out well for me.
Yeah, Herbie, here's the difference. They would give it to you. Pollock steals it. That's the difference.
Hey, man, I'll have all the coof you want, bro. First of all, people like me don't belong at Augusta, okay? Kirk calls me a three technique because basically a three technique is a sloppy defensive lineman. I get more tweets and stuff about my hair every week. And just let me go ahead and address this for all the podcasters, for all 13 people that are listening right now. Listen, I don't care what I look like. I don't care if I do my hair. I don't care if I got a fancy suit on. I don't care. By the way, we don't do makeup this year because we don't have a makeup girl. I ain't doing my makeup. I don't give a crap, okay? I'm up there to talk ball with Kirk, kind of hang in there, have some fun, and, you know, throw some congratulatory remarks around and throw some truth around, and then I'm gone. He gone.
That's we appreciate that, and that's a defensive lineman right there. That's why I call him three technique. I don't care about what suit I got on. I don't care what the hair looks like. See, that's a defensive lineman. That's how they approach things, which you got to love. You got to appreciate. They know their lane. They just stay right in their lane. He's good.
It's a blessing too, because he's comfortable in his own skin, man. That is a blessing. Not many people are comfortable in their own skin, and they could just tell everybody about it, right? And be on TV and just be like, all right, this is who you're going to get. I ain't trying to do anything different. What my wife packed me and I'm going to wear today. That's exactly what he does. When I get packed in the suitcase.
100%. She packs my suit every week and just makes it very, very dummy proof. So it's good. It's good.
Let's transition to unpacking what's going on in Ann Arbor. And we have gone down this road again. I'm not trying to make this about, you know, what's wrong with Michigan. Guys, we've talked about this. It's just like if it was a 10-point game that was competitive and Herbie, you were there. You and Fowler were very outspoken, which was great, because I think the fan base at Michigan was just like, we need to hear all this. The one thing that startles me, and there are many layers to this conversation in year six with Harbaugh, is that what we're seeing in the last 3 weeks is just there is no heart. There is no energy. I don't know where the effort is, especially on the defensive side in that first half. That's the thing that stood out to me, that every week we question, are they getting the right players and what's going on? Do they have enough talent? And they still do an excellent job in recruiting. And when you look at where they are in February, but still for Harbaugh, it has always been, we are going to have energy. And I was stunned that we did not see that in the Big House against Wisconsin. What did you see?
Well, that was a deep sigh right there, Kirk. I like that.
Well, I've just gotten to a point, I think, like you have, that it just is what it is. You know, we've been banging our heads around on this and thinking, you know, now they go. You know, I want you to remember, though, the way their season ended, the reason their fan base, this is a fan base that, by the way, when they look in the mirror, they look at themselves like they're a national power, which they should with their history. So think about what happened to them last year. They had one, they had a couple losses. They got, they, remember the Wisconsin game got really sideways. They lost to Penn State on the road. And then the last two games, they lose again to Ohio State, but they give up a ton of yards through the air. And then to finish it off, they go and play Alabama. And Alabama, Mac Jones lights them up a ton of yards. So their last two games left a really bad taste in the mouth of their fans. Then we get into a pandemic and COVID and protocols, and the Big Ten's not going to play. Now they are going to play. And then they follow it up with what's happened this year. So you got the last two games last year, and then the Minnesota game. Hey, you know what? They're looking good, right? And then three straight games where they have just been lethargic and going through the motions at times, lack of leadership, lack of playmaking ability, one-dimensional, predictable, and they got issues, you know, on the offensive line where they've lost both their starting tackles. You know, we can sit here and talk all we want about why it's happening. They definitely don't have the roster that they used to have in the heyday when Michigan was Michigan. So, and I just think the players are defeated. They look like a defeated group spiritually. You know, when they're out there, there's just not a lot of belief. You know, and so it's one thing for, you know, like you could say Ohio State fans or other Big Ten fans kind of poking fun of them. That happened maybe last year, the year before. Now it's their most loyal alums that are saying, this ain't happening. This can't go on anymore. So I don't know, man. If you look at their roster, David, you know, they beat Rutgers. They got Penn State, who's really struggling this year, Maryland, who's showing offense, and then Ohio State at the end of the year. So I don't know, man. What are your thoughts on this situation?
Well, you covered every aspect of last year and this year. I just think, you know, attitude, you talk about attitude, you talk about players, attitude reflects leadership, right? And at some point we can keep saying it, and we can dance around it, and we can say the players need to take ownership, and we can say the offense, you know, that so-and-so's out. At some point, man, Harbaugh's got to perform, and you're getting paid $7 million a year, and you're in the top five in that category, by the way. And I know he played at Michigan, and all the allegiance and the love that people have for him. By the way, Kirk, he's proven he's been a great coach in the past. There's something disconnected with him now. And I don't know if it's the youthful nature of the kids being different. Cause you know, Jim, he is old school. He's a different bird, bro. Like he's very different. He's quirky. He's different. And it's his style not getting through to the players. It doesn't appear it is, man. I mean, so, you know, I don't call for people to be fired. That's not my job, but whatever's going on in Ann Arbor isn't working. And I think it's something that needs to be discussed, and his contract runs out after next year. And I know that there's a lot of relationships in the past that are there with him being an alumni, but I can't point to anything positive. We were talking about before the season, can Michigan beat Ohio State? Now we're talking about, can Michigan beat Indiana? Now we're talking about, can Michigan beat, I mean, can they beat Rutgers. Michigan State? Can they beat Rutgers? Yeah. Like, it's just to that point now. So it's a tough deal. And I just don't know. I don't have anything else to say about it that's positive, because there's nothing in Ann Arbor right now that's going on that's great to talk about, you know?
Yeah. And I just want to say this. Like I've said this several times. It's just like if David were evaluating Georgia or Florida, and if Florida were going through something like this, David would be real and talk like he talks about Florida or UCLA or Texas or Ohio State or whoever. That's kind of how he and I both approach our jobs as national analysts. Same thing with me with Michigan. I mean, the fan in me, because I was raised by a dad that played at Ohio State, was a captain there, played and coached with Woody Hayes, and then he coached with Bo Schembechler, went down to Miami of Ohio, coached with Bo. Bo was like, I grew up really idolizing and appreciating Bo. And so I was taught to want Michigan to be undefeated, and then Ohio State play Michigan, and Ohio State kicked, you know, the hell out of them on that day. But I like to see Michigan good. I like to see personally, I just the way I was raised in an old school way, I like to see that brand do well, except one day out of the year. So this is not something, there are a lot of Ohio State fans, kind of the modern fan, that they're celebrating this. They think it's the great, they could lose every game. They think it's great. I don't. I think it's awful. I wish Michigan would get it going. I think I'm a fan of Jim Harbaugh's. I loved him as a player. I wish it would go well, but at this point, I just can't imagine how this thing turns. I just can't. And also say this, and I would say in college football, just like in professional football, the ownership, the general manager, and the head coach, if you notice, have to be aligned. And there's a reason the Steelers and the Patriots and all these teams that win every year, it's because they check all three of those boxes. College football is the same way. The president, the athletic director, and the head coach have to have the same vision and passion and goals and interest in what the college football program is going to be about at that school and what the goals are and how realistic they are and how we go about that. I don't know for a fact, but I just sense there's more to it than Jim Harbaugh. I feel like they've been off track since 2008. We're talking about Michigan. Off track. People made fun of Rich Rod. People made fun of Brady Hoke. Now here we are with Jim Harbaugh. All I'm saying is if Jim Harbaugh is not going to be there, and you know, hopefully he stays, but if he can't win it and they move on, you better think long and hard about who you bring in, and whoever that person might be better make sure that the vision that he has is in alignment with the president and with the AD, because I don't know, man. I just don't feel the like when you go to Columbus, or you go to Athens, or you go to Norman, or you go to Tuscaloosa, man, there's no question what the story is and what the goals are. I don't feel that in Ann Arbor. That's all I'll say.
And that's well said, because when you look at the sidelines and you hear, my phone was blown up from a bunch of Michigan alums who've been ranting and raving, and it felt like Saturday night was more of defeat. Before it was anger. This time it was a different type of emotion. It was just like, it's over. And a few of them brought that disconnect you brought up from above. And I found that interesting. And then we started talking about, we were texting back and forth, me and a couple buddies. And I just said, you just understand that who you bring in, you've got to make sure everybody is patient and understanding, because they were not patient with Rich Rod, and I don't think they were understanding with Brady Hoke. And to me, and you know, I'm not saying you guys will do this, because I'm not going to put you in that spot, but to me, Matt Campbell should be the number one guy on the list from Iowa State. Whether you can bring Luke Fickell out of Ohio is another story, but those are the two guys where I'm like, you can identify, they understand the Midwest, they understand recruiting, and I think they could make an immediate connection with the program and what the program wants to do and who Michigan's identity is. And that's the key. To find out how they find a way to be identified with the program and the coach.
I like what you said, and I like the first name, and it's nothing against Luke Fickell and his name, but I want to coach that's proven to do more with less. Okay. And I say that it's important, because guess what? Michigan is not going to have better players than Ohio State. They're not. Okay. Ohio State recruits at a totally different level than anybody else in the Big Ten. It's not even close. So I would just love to have somebody that's proven to go to a spot like Iowa State and create a tradition, create a culture, and create wins every year. Like, if we're expected with our talent to win 7, we win 9. You know what I'm saying? And somebody that gets it, somebody that's a good person, somebody that I can believe in consistently. So I think he's the name that should be first, second, and third on the list for me.
Well, I just want to say, I would disagree that Michigan shouldn't have a roster that's comparable to Ohio State. I believe they are capable of recruiting at a very different level than they are right now. And I mean, that history tells you that's a fact. I know Ohio State's a machine right now, but there's no reason that Michigan could, if they have, you know, if they have the right guy and go out and recruit and have something to sell. Right now, the problem is, if you're a receiver and your goal is to go play in the NFL, name the last, you know, great receivers, not one, but receivers that they've had that have gone on to play in the NFL. Think about running back. Think about quarterback. I mean, they set the bar in those areas in the Big Ten for about a 10 or 15 year run. And now it's been a long time since Braylon Edwards might be one of their last great receivers. And what did he play? 03, 04? I mean, Mike Hart was.
No, he was my class. He came out in 05.
Wow. Yeah, and five. And Mike Hart was a solid back, you know, good college back. But, I mean, they had, you know, Leroy Horde and Tim Biakabatuka and Ty Wheatley and Chris Perry. And, I mean, it was just one after another. I mean, all those guys, almost all of them were first rounders.
But Kirk, I know for you, you're so, like, you've been so dialed in for so long. But you also mentioned guys that are 20 years ago now.
I know. That's my point. That's my point, is that's how long it's been. So, but I don't think if you have the right guy, it's impossible to get it back to that point. But they've got to get, like I said, they've got to get everybody in alignment of what their vision is and what their goals are. No matter whether it's Jim or it's Matt Campbell or whoever ends up coaching there.
It's time now for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And Herbie, it was a quiet week when it comes to matchups, but we still had a lot of information and data coming in. And where does it look like for you so far when you look at the playoff predictor?
Well, it's getting serious now. I mean, we only have 5 weeks, theoretically, with everything going on with COVID, but 5 weeks on the schedule left of college football, you know, regular season and conference championship games. So every week we're going to be taking a look at the All-State Playoff Predictor. And as we know, the All-State Playoff Predictor, it's going to project the top team's chances of making the college football playoff. And we'll be pointing out where protection can really change the game. And remember, get better protected with All-State. You've never been in better hands. And everything kind of held serve this past week. I mean, Alabama, of course, wasn't able to go out and play against LSU. I still have them up at one. Notre Dame got a little bit of a challenge in Boston College early anyway. And I think showed resiliency and toughness to be able to kind of say, hey, listen, 1993 is not happening again. So they took care of BC. Still Ohio State and Clemson I have there at 3 and 4. And the big debate or discussion is who would be, you know, the next teams. I mean, there are a lot of deserving teams that you could put in there. You know, I know that the All-State Playoff Predictor has Wisconsin up really high, up in the top four, has them at 3. BYU is a team that I've talked about really all year since I was able to see them week one against Navy. But for me, I have Florida ahead of Texas A&M, even though A&M beat them. I just cannot get over the way they've been playing since their experience at Kyle Field, where they were going down to probably win the game until they turned the ball over. So I have Florida up there, and then I have BYU just ahead of Texas A&M right now in Cincinnati.
And then when you look at the Oregons and the Pac-12s of the world, they're just under 39%. The USC's of the world, just under 5%. Florida sitting at 18%. Cincinnati at 12%. I like seeing this just because I think it's just a great conversation, what we're seeing from other teams in the Big Ten. Northwestern, undefeated, a 3% chance. At least they're in the conversation. And Indiana's there, 1.6%. So at least the playoff predictors recognizing what they've done so far to start off the season in the first four games. Let's go to the other side here. Okay, we got the Michigan conversation out of the way. And I don't want to focus on the negative here. I want to highlight what Wisconsin has done because it's pretty incredible, right? Like they open up the season, Graham Mertz does what he does, and you're like, whoa, we haven't seen a quarterback like this at Wisconsin. And then they're out for 3 weeks, but then Paul Chryst, they come out and they set the tone early. And now they've got Northwestern, a very good defense of the Wildcats this coming weekend, then Minnesota, then Indiana, and then Iowa. What do we make of the Badgers right now? What we saw, and Herbie, what were your eyes telling you? Because it's hard to come to a conclusion after watching them against Michigan and Illinois, but what's your gut telling you about this team as they get ready for Northwestern?
I just love Wisconsin every year. It almost doesn't even matter who's on the roster. You know, Paul Chryst is, and it really goes back to Barry Alvarez in the mid 90s, what he started. And as the AD, you know, you can feel the same kind of personality and characteristics that those teams in the mid 90s have, and they still have it today. You know, it's a offense. Paul Chryst is, he does it in a very different way, and it's very effective and it's very consistent. He's got a quarterback right now that gives him a chance. They don't have a great deal of depth right now at receiver. You know, they're good. They're always good, but I think that's the area, you know, when you go up against the Northwestern, it's being able to make plays. And that's a sneaky, really, really good game. Cause I was impressed with Northwestern finding a way to hold on and beat Purdue last week. And, you know, what Paul Chryst does on offense and Jim Leonard does on defense, they're kind of a throwback sound. Everybody's in the right gap. Everybody's doing what they need to do. Their defensive line, Pollock, we got to have you roll up your sleeves and really study their defensive line, because in the past they had just big thumpers that were just, we're going to eat these double teams up and let Chryst Orr fly around and make plays. Let our backers make plays flying downhill. They don't do that right now. They've got some guys that are athletic and they use their hands and they get off blocks. And so you combine good linebacker play with defensive linemen that are kind of freakish. It makes their defense dynamic. So I think I think that game will be low scoring. I think it'll be kind of which team's able to take advantage of their opportunities. Wisconsin seemed like every time they were in the red zone, they were scoring touchdowns, not kicking field goals. But I'm a fan of their team and their program in general.
And I think when I watch Wisconsin, we've been saying it for weeks, and we've said, listen, Ohio State, you can go ahead and put them in. You can go ahead and put them in. When I watch Mertz go to Ferguson and throw that ball only where Ferguson can catch it, that's when I go, like the tight end seam route, he throws the Ferguson. Ferguson was 84. Just for everybody that doesn't know that what I'm talking about, Ferguson was covered. He's not open. It's not open. That's called like throwing the ball only where your guy can get it and being elite. And if you've got that dude, that's the only time you've ever seen Wisconsin, like in the last whatever 15, 20 years. If Russell Wilson, they had an elite quarterback, they had a chance to do elite things. Like, this, it's not a surprise, by the way. What is Penn State missing? An elite quarterback. You know, like, what is Michigan missing? An elite quarterback. And I think Wisconsin is always going to be a team that can be really good because they're going to be super physical. They're going to be super disciplined. Both offense and defense is going to be so well coached. And by the way, the kids you work with are super smart. They can do a lot of things. You watch them defensively, it's not easy to play multiple coverages and be able to do the different blitz packages they do. It's not easy to do that. And for them to be able to do that. But to me, if Mertz can continue to be that guy and make those type of throws, well now, okay, we get in a shootout with Wisconsin. We got a chance, you know? I mean, so as I've said, you know, Ohio State, it's Ohio State and everybody else. And that's kind of the way I've thought throughout the whole process. If Graham Mertz can continue to develop and have anticipation and be that dude like that, then they got a chance to win every game and be competitive. And, you know, in Ohio State, he's going to have to play out of his mind.
And you keep your fingers crossed, right, the rest of the way that they can play their games as we've looked at conferences now, looking at the concept of adjusting and getting these games in if things are canceled.
You touched on something about, and we kind of, bragging more on Wisconsin than answering a question about what they accomplished, because to play a game and everybody gets excited, and then they have some tests pop up, and then they have a lot of tests pop up positive with the staff and players, so they have to shut it down. When I say shut it down, I'm talking about nobody leaves their apartment. It's not like you're still going over, getting a workout in. We're just not playing on Saturday. I'm talking 11 days. No one sees anybody. They're on Zoom. No one's, you know, you're working out maybe in your apartment doing push-ups or sit-ups or whatever, but you're not going to the facility. I mean, think about that. And then think about how efficient they looked in that game. And you could say, well, Michigan's not any good, but I don't care if you're going up against scout team. When you miss
air, it's hard to do that on air.
Yeah. That's what made, they're just a really well coached operation, and on both sides and all three phases. And it showed. So, yeah, a lot of talk about Michigan, but we can't say enough good things about Wisconsin and overcoming that. And as David said, you know, they this weekend, we'll see what happens against Northwestern. The winner, obviously, in the driver's seat in the West. But going in, I still feel like they're the team to beat in that game this weekend.
Their final two games, I actually can't wait to see how they match up and where Indiana is later on in this season. And you mentioned elite quarterback play, Pollock. I'm not sure there's anybody on the planet when it comes to college football conversation right now that's playing better than Kyle Trask. What he did in the first half against the Barry Odom defense, and Arkansas came in, you know, second of the ACC in the defensive conversation, and he's playing without Kyle Pitts. What was your first reaction when you saw what Kyle Trask was doing? And then how does that play into the Heisman conversation in your mind, Pollock?
Well, what he's been doing all season, you know, you're talking about four plus touchdowns in every, or four, at least four touchdown passes every game, you know, carved up Georgia like they were just some scrubs. And then go to Arkansas, who's got a really good pass defense, and do the same thing. It's just, it's crazy, man. It's crazy what, and I don't mean this isn't negative, but think about what Florida fell into a year ago. Like, Trask still would not be playing. Felipe Franks probably would still be there. Like, and there's, you watch them both on the field at the same time, and Trask, just his poise, his strength in the pocket, and his ability to drop dimes. I mean, he throws the ball so beautifully, and just like, boom, right where I need it. Boom, right where I need it. You know, the cerebralness of him, and just, it's been amazing to watch, and he deserves to be in the conversation. And guess what? He'll have a showcase down the road with Alabama, where he can get more attention, just like we're going to see big games with all these guys. He deserves to be in the conversation. By the way, Ian Book's not in the conversation anywhere either, and he needs to be now. Like, he's another guy that, Kirk, this is the best I've ever seen Ian Book play. I mean, he's playing way better. Even they won 12-7 against Louisville early in the year, dude. Like,
right.
He's starting to click, and something's starting to get in his brain, and his accuracy's gotten better, and they're making plays for him, you know, in the receiving game. And just, man, the quarterback position with Fields and obviously Trevor's going to come back to the mix. And I mean, it's just, it's deep, man. We can go a lot of different spots to find a lot of great play. And this Heisman race is very much up in the air, and whoever, you know, has a good closing kick, I think, is going to get more and more love throughout the season.
Well, and let me interrupt here real quick before we get Herbie's thoughts too. And here's a little wrinkle too, because of the Heisman being pushed back. What we've normally seen is the voting and everything takes place. The ceremony now is going to be on January 5th. The deadline for voting will be Monday on December 21st after the conference championship game. So there's a lot to be said that Book gets another chance. Trask, like you said, gets a chance against Alabama. We will see that play out in front of us. And, you know, Justin Fields in the conversation. Who knows what that's going to be like if they play potentially a Graham Mertz in Wisconsin. Go ahead. Sorry about that. I just wanted to make sure we had some context on it being pushed there.
I would just say that I think Trask right now is the greatest strength that he has. There's two things: the weapons around him. He spread the ball around even without Pitts, 10 more receivers, just like last week against Georgia, 10 receivers catching the ball. And guys are starting to emerge and making plays for him, especially in the red zone. Like Trevon Grimes, I think, is playing with a different level of confidence right now. The kid out of Penn State, you see that catch he made, Justin Shorter, where he went up in the air. It was really well covered, but he just made a great play. So between the accuracy and the decision-making of what Trask is doing, and then you throw in the playmaking ability and the depths of this Florida roster, they're just loaded. The skill spots and the tight ends, it's a great combination. But his greatest strength is his ability to process Dan Mullen's scheme, process coverage, know where to go with the ball, and there's no hesitation. When he stepped in for Felipe Franks, the biggest difference I saw from Franks going back to last year to when he got, we called the LSU game, like maybe a second start, the ball was just coming out so much faster than when Felipe Franks, who's talented, was engineering the offense earlier the first three games. This Trask kid, who I didn't know anything about, he's getting back, boom, ball is out. He just knew where to go with the ball. He didn't have this big, huge arm or great athletic ability. It was like almost like a Larry Bird kind of approach where he just – Larry Bird just always did the right thing and obviously had ridiculous ability of shooting the ball and had vision on the court. This guy kind of has that in football, and he just doesn't have off-the-charts physical talents that's going to make you go, oh, he's a first-round pick, first pick overall. But in that system, understanding what to do – Brian Johnson, their offensive coordinator, told me last week – His understanding of the red zone and on third downs is at a different level than we've ever really seen or expected from him. And so I said on game day, he's understanding kind of the why, which means like Joe Burrow last year, you go to any coverage, bang, he's got an answer for it. And then you throw in the weapons. It's not like he just has that one guy, Kyle Pitts. He's got several. So I don't think he's just in the conversation. If people don't just go by preseason expectations of Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, I mean, if you just watch this guy play and look at his numbers he's putting up, I think he's right there, toe-to-toe with anybody in the entire country.
Especially when you go by the numbers. I mean, the most touchdown passes in SEC history after the first six games. And, you know, and he's – top of mind right now when it comes to the conversation, because we didn't see Mac Jones this weekend, but his numbers are ridiculous as well. And I like that what Pollock brought up with Book, because Book just looks much more confident and comfortable the last couple of weeks, saying, okay, I'm never going to panic here. We're going to figure our this whole thing out. I want to stay in the SEC with some news coming out. Will Muschamp being out at South Carolina. And you look at the buyouts from Florida and South Carolina, it's over $20 million. This is an interesting place, South Carolina. And when it comes to who should be the next head coach, if Lane Kiffin was still, at Florida Atlantic, I'd be like, this is a slam dunk. But the Hugh Freeze conversation, and everybody's sitting there saying, well, he knows what he's doing, and look what they're doing at Liberty. Billy Napier, the assistants at Clemson, with Venables and Elliott. Who do you think South Carolina should target right now for a job here to turn things around? And that's not just on the surface of building some buzz, but also, hey, sustainable progress in competing with Clemson and staying viable in the SEC.
David, what do you got?
I Hugh Freeze, second, first, third. What is South Carolina needed every year, year after year after year? It's offense, man. It's always
since Spurrier left.
Yeah, I mean, it's always just you want to see more on that side of the football. I think the fans are dying for that. By the way, Q knows how to do that. And whether it's at Liberty, whether it's at Ole Miss, wherever it's at, he's a phenomenal offensive football coach. I love his story of, he messed up, dude. He did. And he owns that. I think he's got a good personality. I don't think he has to have the most elite recruiting, the most elitely recruited kids. I think people will want to play for his offensive scheme, his system. So I think Hugh Freeze, experience in the SEC, experience against guys you're going to be playing against week in and week out. I don't see how that's not a home run for South Carolina.
Hugh, I think, is enjoying Liberty. I think he would love to be back in the SEC as a head coach. I'm with you. I think Hugh Freeze has owned up everything that he went through. His family has been there with him. I think at this point, everything he's been able to do with kind of picking up the pieces and doing the best that he can to put the past in the past, learn from that, and move on. He's doing a heck of a job at Liberty. Think about what Liberty. Think about Liberty is beat Syracuse. They beat Virginia Tech. They're going to have a chance against North Carolina State. They're scoring. I mean, go back to Bo Wallace and Chad Kelly when they're beating Alabama. The guy's one of the minds of the game right now in college football when it comes to knowing how to score. And he's got a proven track record. He would be a great fit. What if he's not interested? What if he would want to wait potentially? He's going to become a very, very hot commodity. What if he didn't want to go there? Who else would be? You mentioned Billy. You know, this South Carolina team, you know, they've had to live in that same state with Clemson. And yep. I think they won 8 in the regular season. I think back in 17, it was a year they ended up playing Michigan and beat them. So they got 9 wins in 17. But other than that,
it's a tough job, Kirk.
It is.
That's a tough job. We can spin it nicely and we can tell you.
Spurrier had him rolling for like 3 or 4 straight years.
How did he do it, by the way?
10 years ago, offense. I mean, there was
a lot. He got very fortunate, or whatever you want to call it. Like the state of South Carolina, you know, Clemson wasn't rolling like it was, and the state of South Carolina was producing Mr. Football, being Alshon Jeffrey, Marcus Lattimore. I mean, Stephon Gilmore. Like, you're talking about elite level guys that came out of the state. Jadeveon Clowney, like guys that were coming out of that state all of a sudden that were so good. And now, by the way, killing it. You know, have had great NFL careers beyond that. And now, where are those guys going? They're going to Clemson. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah. I think it's really tough. And now you got, you know, Kirby at Georgia that's still doing well, and you're going to have guys, other people around it that are doing even better. And you got
Mac at North Carolina doing that as well.
The one thing Will's done well, by the way, he's recruited pretty well, and he's put guys, you know, in the league. He's done a good job of finding some defensive talent. It's just been, you know,
no imagination on offense. And it comes back to the offense. And the guy that I would think that if we go down this list is, what about Sark? What about Sarkisian from Alabama? Because he brings some offense and he knows the SEC. What do you guys think about that potential possibility?
Sark, also another guy that's had some things to have to deal with in his past. And I think he's done an admirable job as well of handling that and addressing that. There was a great article just a couple weeks ago about, you know, him dealing with that every day. And so far, knock on wood, he's been in a really good place. His football, the job that he does coaching football has been obvious. You know, he had a head coaching job at Washington. And he left that to take the USC job. And then, of course, he had his issues. But I think the success that he has, I almost wonder deep down if he's maybe thinking staying with Coach Saban, and then when Coach Saban retires, he would be maybe in the pole position to kind of be that next guy. Because who else would you say would be that guy potentially? And I don't know if that's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5, whenever that is. I don't know. I don't know if he'd be willing to leave Alabama as the OC personally to go to South Carolina and start, you know, from scratch. I don't know. Maybe he would, but I think he's in a better spot right now to wait and to kind of see what else might come up down the road.
We're going to certainly, of course, monitor how this plays out. There's going to be a lot more changes with COVID or without COVID. I think we're going to see in the landscape of college football. You guys heading to Bedlam. Cannot wait to see what Oklahoma State and Oklahoma can bring us on Saturday night. And Herbie, my fingers are crossed. We just want a close game. I know the crew on ABC wants a close game as well on Saturday night. We haven't gotten any. In the meantime, fellas, stay safe. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good.
See you, dudes.
Big thanks, Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollack on Mondays, as always. They're always great with the recent topics from the weekend as we get you ready for week 12. If you enjoy the podcast, always can subscribe, rate, and review, and share your thoughts. We love the feedback. Taylor Schwenk on the other side, of course, keeping us honest and coordinating it throughout the pandemic as we do this from our homes and we find a way. Pollack, who knows where he was at, as you heard the background, whether he's at Chick-fil-A, he's golfing, or he's just out with his buddies. This Monday, he takes us on an adventure on every single podcast. If you want more football, guys, we hope you stay safe, and we hope you wear a mask and social distance and keep our fingers crossed as we head into the holiday season. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.